Support for this public radio podcast comes from Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com.
Back at the table.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott J. Gow. The U.S. and other countries sat down in China today to once again talk about North Korea's nuclear program. Usually these conversations have a cloud hanging over them, namely that North Korea doesn't listen to anybody. But there's reason for optimism this time. The U.S. might be willing to unfreeze some bank assets of North Korean leaders. Marketplace's Scott Tong reports from our Shanghai bureau.
The U.S. government thinks the Banco Delta Asia in Macau is a hub of illegal activity by North Korean leaders, laundering money and printing fake bills, for instance. At Washington's behest, the bank froze $24 million in Pyongyang assets in 2005. 17 months later, Susan Shirk of the University of California at San Diego thinks the financial pinch is working.
It's not just because of the small amount of money that was frozen in this one bank, but because of the ripple effect on other banks throughout the world and their reluctance to deal with North Korean money.
She says being shut out of the world's banking system is motivating North Korea to return to the bargaining table. Speculation is if Pyongyang leaders talk disarmament and nuclear inspectors, Washington may unfreeze half their bank assets and also offer economic and energy assistance. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
The Dow shot up for a while yesterday, but in the end, the percentage gain was the same as Blutarsky's grade point average, 0.0. The Dow's still at 12,666, but the NASDAQ put on 19 points to 2490. The S&P 500 gained 2 to 1452. Here's an interesting question. How much money could the U.S. save if the number of high school dropouts was cut in half? A new report from Columbia University says the answer is $45 billion. Nancy Marshall Genzer has more.
Columbia says taxpayers would save $127,000 per new graduate. The researchers say if students finished high school, they wouldn't need Medicaid or welfare. And study co-author Henry Levin says there's more.
They pay larger taxes, and that's nice. You know? The second thing is that they're less likely to be involved in the criminal justice system.
Levin followed students enrolled in dropout prevention programs from preschool to adulthood. But Neil McCluskey of the Cato Institute is dubious.
You can't take a small program, project it on an entire country, and say, oh, it'll produce the exact same relative savings that it produced when it was just a small program.
But Columbia says other studies back up its research. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Last week, we told you about a story in the London Guardian. It said the American Enterprise Institute offered scientists and economists money to find flaws in that big UN report on climate change. We said the American Enterprise Institute was a think tank funded by ExxonMobil. Exxon contacted us to make sure it was clear the company is not the sole funder of the AEI. We apologize if anyone got that impression from the story.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, working with Habitat for Humanity to build over 350 homes this year with families in need. On the web at thriventbuilds.com. And by Mellon Financial Corporation, helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com.
By now, you've probably gotten an earful about the budget President Bush sent to Congress this week. We've been combing through it for anything that might have been missed. Our economics correspondent Chris Farrell came up with something. Money for scientific research and development.
The budget only has a 1% real increase, so real means adjusted for inflation, in R&D, in energy, atomic energy, natural resources and environment, in transportation. So in other words, global warming. Mm-hmm. And energy security, if you want to use a huge rubric. And, you know, the White House has made a genuine sea change, or appears to be a genuine sea change, in terms of talking about global warming and talking more about energy independence. But I got to tell you, you look at this real increase, 1%, it's not much of a commitment.
So what you're saying is there's a disconnect between the idea of coming up with new technologies and advancing this stuff and actually putting the money into the research for it.
Right. So 1% increase. Mike Mandel, chief economist, Business Week magazine, did this calculation. He says, look, we're going to be spending 17% below what we were spending in 1993, 40% below what we were spending in 1979, which was the peak of the last energy crisis. This is the wrong direction. Science is important in terms of our international competitiveness. And by the way, there are two big problems. Global warming is a problem. Energy security, it's an issue. Let's unleash the power of scientists and their ideas to address these issues, but they're going to need a bigger increase, a bigger priority than 1%.
Now, what about venture capital? What about the private sector?
Right. A lot of people like to complain about the federal government. Can't do this, can't do that. But one thing the federal government does really well is fund basic science. Because we have this magnificent university system, we have research institutes, and we have a very good system of peer review for funding basic research and development. Now we have a lot of really smart people called venture capitalists. You're absolutely right. Now what they're doing is they're poring over this research and this development, and they're trying to say, what's going to work? What should I be backing? What the federal government doesn't do well is necessarily pick the technology, but we have a lot of very, very top-notch, world-class universities with plenty of smart scientists. I say, hey, increase the spending, see what they can come up with.
All right, Chris, thank you.
Okay.
Our economics correspondent, Chris Farrell. A state senator from Brooklyn wants to fine people $100 if they cross the street using a cell phone, a BlackBerry, or an iPod. Senator Carl Krueger says some New Yorkers have been the victim of their own distraction. We called up an expert in culture and communication for his take on this.
I think if the state Senate were to pass this bill, New Yorkers would be in danger from the constant rolling of their eyes in disbelief that this is actually one of the greatest problems facing Brooklyn or the state of New York.
Siva Vaidyanathan is an associate professor at New York University. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and have a good day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.